Do you know why I was so eager to like stop chit-chatting and start recording?
No, why?
Because I'm in New York and it's hot and I just want to be in my underwear. We had our cameras on.
Like, ooh la la, maintenance phase after dark.
We don't have air conditioning. And so I'm just like sitting like sweltering and all the windows have to be closed for the noise.
What's the temp over there?
It's like 71, but I'm a pussy.
It's 71, but we're from very similar climates.
Yeah, we're from the Pacific Northwest, above like 64. It's like when I start complaining.
At one point in the UK, when I was in Sheffield, there were people who were just like, oh my God, it's going to be a scorcher out there today, blah, 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 blah. And they were all using Celsius numbers, which are just evaporate in my brain.
Okay, yeah.
So at one point I looked up the temperature in Fahrenheit and it was genuinely like 74.
Yeah. This is me.
Well, I found my people.
Tagline us, what do you have?
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Maintenance Phase, the podcast that might have led you astray in the past, but this time we've really got the ticket.
I knew you'd catch that. Okay. So we just like chatted and like caught up for like 45 minutes, but we didn't talk about this at all.
I'm so proud of us.
I mean, I guess, okay, first we have to say we're talking about the Oprah Wait special, which you know from the title.
Yep.
But okay, we're gonna, I have like extensive notes and like hella clips.
Great.
But overall thoughts, Aubrey, overall thoughts.
I'll tell you a couple of things.
Okay.
We have gotten a real split in emails from listeners on this topic.
Oh.
About half of our listener emails have been people going, here comes Oprah doing her Oprah thing again.
Mm-hmm.
And the other half of the emails have been people going, I think she's finally getting it. I think she's really coming along.
Wait, really?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes. The reason for this special's existence feels so clear to me. And it is also clear that doesn't feel super clear to some of our listeners.
To me, this felt like just a very straightforward piece of propaganda.
I mean, just infomercial.
Yeah, fully just like, it does all that and more.
This is what comes on after Last Call with Carson Daly.
Yeah, yeah.
It used to be a test pattern, but now it's this. Ron Popeil has a thing to sell you.
Yeah.
The other thing that I thought about is like, there is currently a huge lobbying push from weight loss industry players to require Medicare and Medicaid coverage and broad insurance mandates for coverage of semaglutides and all of these sort of GLP-1 agonists. And I was like, man, if you told me this special was part of the lobbying strategy,
dude, I know, I was thinking about that
I would
too.
Be like, yes, yeah, that yeah, tracks.
Yeah yeah. yeah, yeah.
I noticed this amongst my parents and their sort of group of friends in their age group, that there is a real sadness to talking about feeling sort of swindled by diet culture.
Yeah.
Because for them, it has been 60 plus years of their lives and of their disposable income, right? And like, you're sort of forcing someone to confront like, hey, maybe you did all of this for nothing.
One thing that I came across while I was doing research for this was that, did you know Oprah's 69 years old?
I thought she was 70, no? Didn't she just turn 70?
Maybe she just turned 70, but a lot of the articles said like the 69-year-old Winfrey, but like she does not look like a 70-year-old woman.
No.
Oprah has this like weird kind of agelessness where like she was like, when I was growing up, she was just like an adult. And when you're 15, people who are 30 and people who are like 50 are just like the same to you. You're just like, oh yeah, it's like old people.
Yep, totally.
And so
totally.
In my life, I think she's reached this place where I just kind of think of her as like a sort of mid-40s lady. And I haven't like updated that at all. And so I'm just like, oh, she's 69? I mean, first of all, she looks amazing for 69.
Yeah.
But it's also, what's so amazing to me is like, even at 69, she can't get rid of it.
Stop me if I've told you this story. I might have. There was one point when I was working on the first book and I was at the Cedar Hills Powell's location, which is like attached to a mall. And there's a back window that looks out onto the mall. And the thing that you see is a Weight Watchers center. And I was sitting there writing. And anytime my attention would drift, I would look up at the Weight Watchers center. And every time the people who were going in and coming out were like my parents' age or older.
Interesting.
70s okay. plus. Yeah. And it felt like an indication of two things. One, this dynamic that you're talking about like, oh my God, this just runs so deep for you that you are going to do this until the day you die.
Yeah.
You're going to be dieting just as like a way of life.
Yeah.
And two, it also highlighted for me a real core consumer issue that Weight Watchers has.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They must be very aware of this. But yeah, like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's such a hard one. I mean, I had a long conversation with one of my mom's friends and was talking to her about, like, can you imagine not dieting? Can you imagine not going to Weight Watchers? And she just could, her belief just ran as deep as any belief in her.
Yeah.
That she was just like, I won't know how to eat. I will be completely out of control.
Yeah.
Of that, like, you can't trust your appetite. You can't trust, like, it's just like a generation of people who've been so cut off from, like, their own, like, bodily hunger cues and shit like that. It's really something.
The business model thing reminds me of whenever I'm at Walgreens or whatever, and I look next to the cash register and there's, like, People magazine or something, and it's always some cover story about, like, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie and, like, Jennifer Aniston or something. These celebrity controversies of, like, 30 years ago, and it's like, oh yeah, that's who buys physical magazines.
Yep, totally.
Now it's like people my parents' age.
God, the Jennifer Aniston pull is such a good one, because it is like every 6 months you'll be at the checkout in the grocery store and there will be some tabloid that's like, Jennifer, she's childless and says she's happy, but no kids? Question mark? How could she be?
She's just, like, doing her thing. It must be so frustrating to her whenever she goes to Walgreens as well. She's like, me again?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to our first clip.
Before we dive into a first clip, I just want to, like, set a quick frame.
Oh.
I wanted to look at this special for sort of what it's doing narratively. And I actually think what it's doing narratively is mimicking a larger progression of conversations about dieting and how it sort of markets itself, right? The core messages in this special are, it's a disease, it's not your fault, your disease just needs treatment, which follows sort of an arc of weight loss rhetoric that we've seen historically, right? The early sort of stuff was, it's your fault, you're not trying hard enough. And then it was, it's your fault because you haven't tried the right diet yet. Then it was, diets don't work. This isn't a diet. It's a lifestyle, right? Then this isn't a lifestyle. It's a life hack. And now this isn't your fault. It's a disease that just needs treatment. It's a medical problem that lies outside of your control. And what I wanted to say about this sort of arc of stuff is that each of those shifts has been prompted not by deeper scientific understanding. It's been prompted by the weight loss industry needing to rebrand.
100%. Yeah.
Regardless of what the intention was behind it, regardless of whatever, this end product, however we got to this special, is absolutely doing the work of marketing these drugs.
Dude, when I was doing research, I found an article that was like, do you think the drugs will have an uptick in sales since Oprah's special? And it's like, do you not know anything about Oprah? Like, she talks about a book and it sells like 40 million copies. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
This is famously the fucking Oprah effect.
Okay, let's do our first clip. This was the part of the special, the first like 45 seconds of the special. I was like, she was building up a little bit of goodwill. And I feel like it's important to start with, like, Oprah's, I think, very real, like, emotional journey with this issue and, like, where she is coming from.
Yes.
Aubrey, I went through a whole thing, because you can't screen grab Hulu links, because obviously they have, like, blockers so that you can't, like, download clips. So I was, like, filming it. I was, like, filming it on my phone, but then I kept getting Grindr notifications. And they kept popping up. I was like, I do not want to send Aubrey like a book. But like, I don't want Aubrey to know what else I'm doing on my phone.
As if we don't talk constantly about what's...
But yeah. I didn't want you to say...
Into a microphone.
The way that I live my life.
3, 2, 1, play.
In my lifetime, I never dreamed that we would be talking about medicines that are providing hope for people like me who have struggled for years with being overweight or with obesity. So I come to this conversation in the hope that we can start releasing the stigma and the shame and the judgment to stop shaming other people for being overweight or how they choose to lose or not lose weight. And more importantly, to stop shaming ourselves. I have to say that I took on the shame that the world gave to me. For 25 years, making fun of my weight was national sport. And I'll never forget a day in 1990. I saw myself on the cover of TV Guide's best and worst dress list. And I remember thinking at first, oh, look, there I am on the cover. And then I read the headline, bumpy, lumpy, and downright dumpy. I was ridiculed on every late night talk show for 25 years and tabloid covers for 25 years. Here are just a few of the thousands of headlines written about me. Oprah, fatter than ever. Oprah hits 246 pounds. Final showdown with Stedman sends her into feeding frenzy. Oprah warned, diet or die. So in an effort to combat all the shame, I starved myself for nearly 5 months and then wheeled out that wagon of fat that the internet will never let me forget. And after losing 67 pounds on a liquid diet, the next day, y'all, the very next day, I started to gain it back.
This is all true.
Yeah, people have been really shitty to Oprah about her weight. As we talked about in our episode.
Truly unhinged levels of like a dismissal of and caricature of Black women.
Yes.
I feel for her in a really deep way about this. Mm-hmm. This is like a level of scrutiny that I think a lot of people identify with. But if we're honest with ourselves, none of us have experienced this, right?
In some ways, Oprah is very similar to a lot of, as you said, women of her generation who've like struggled with their weight and like the all of this bullshit diet culture nonsense. And so on some level, I'm like kind of willing to let Oprah be a 69-year-old woman who like can't let go of this stuff because like the conditions of her life have been such that she's been subject to so much more of a fucking magnifying glass on this stuff.
Yes.
On the other hand, it makes it very difficult for her to be leading conversations like this because it's like, right, Oprah, but your conditions are also very different than other people's. And also her resources are also so different from other people's too.
And I will just say, like, just to be explicit, I felt profoundly emotionally uncomfortable and sad watching this entire thing.
Yeah.
Because it is not different than like any previous Oprah moment.
Yeah,
right?
I know, it's wild.
Once again, Oprah's on TV being like, I figured it out, guys. I feel better about who I am. I'm focused on my character. And that's because I'm a thin person, right?
Dude, now. I this is what I was thinking too. It's like we've gone through this cycle, not only like as individuals and as a culture, but like with Oprah.
So many
of
times.
Like she loses weight and she's like, I'm done with the weight conversation. And like, I don't want to be mean. It's so hard to talk about this without like reproducing the fucking garbage that Oprah has been subjected to. And like, as an emotional experience, I like really, really, really feel for her.
Yeah.
But like, it's just like, it follows all of the formulas that we've seen on keto and Atkins. And it's like, it's
just
the wagon
everything.
Of fat episode again.
Yeah,
and like,
totally.
I'm not saying, I don't actually think that Ozempic is like a fad diet. I think it is different in like meaningful ways, but also it's like so much of the coverage that we're seeing about it is like fad diet coverage again.
The new miracle drug ?
Dude, really?
A big chunk of this special is people sharing personal stories.
Dude, and they all seem so nice. All the people are so nice and I want
yes.
them to be happy.
And I think part of what's happening in this special that feels so... that is like the wellspring of sadness for me about this special.
Mm.
They will talk about things as if everything that has happened as a result of taking these drugs is a direct result of weight loss.
Yeah.
So, for example, the first story that they share is this woman named Amy, who was a fat lady who was also like super antisocial and like not hanging out with friends, not making friends, staying inside, all of this kind of stuff. Then she says, then the inevitable happened. I was diagnosed with diabetes. And I was like, this is actively irresponsible to broadcast.
Yeah.
It is not inevitable that fat people get diabetes.
No,
it just isn't. She also talks about people treating her and her children better because she's a thin person. And like, they don't talk about, despite all of this sort of lip service about shaming, they're not like, hey, fuckos. Don't treat people's kids differently if their parents are fat, you absolute ghouls, right? Like, there's no criticism of that behavior. It's just like, look at how much better things are now that I'm a thin person.
I know it's.
And like the story that they tell is like fat person got her life back by losing weight. And the story that is explicitly there is a person got diagnosed with diabetes and then got treatment for that diabetes that was very effective for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very different thing than like, fat lady was so sad and shut herself inside.
I know.
And her relationship was in a bad place. And like the thing that this felt like to me was I was like, I feel like I'm in sixth grade and I'm sitting at a Weight Watchers meeting right now.
Yeah.
These are exactly the stories that have always been told about weight loss that fail to unpack how much we're projecting on.
Yeah.
This stuff talks about medical benefits, social benefits, intrapersonal, like confidence, mindset kind of stuff, health stuff, and industry stuff, all as these are the natural results of weight loss, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, that's not what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
The bias didn't go away. You just became a different kind of person that doesn't experience that kind of fucking bias.
Yeah. I don't hold hands with my boyfriend in public anymore. And like people stopped calling me slurs. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Everyone's so much nicer now that I don't hold hands with my boyfriend. Wow. Great. We really solved stigma today.
God, I hate it so much, Michael.
Wait, we have to get to the next clip. This is the one that you flagged.
Sorry. Clearly I am having feelings about this special.
It took me like 2 days to watch this because I was like, it was like driving me so fucking nuts. And I would alt tab away and like look up stuff. But I'm just like, I don't know that I want to like dive back into this. It was like so unpleasant.
Totally. That's how I felt too. I was so glad when you texted me and you were like, they're going to make me watch this at 1.0 speed. What kind of fucking monstrosity?
I'm still so fucking mad about that. This is a fucking human rights violation.
Did you get the speed controller thing?
No, because I was like, I was transcribing it kind of as I went. So,
gotcha.
But then I was like, Aubrey's going to make me watch this at 1.0 speed, like an animal listening to normal human intonation.
And famously, I do control the options available on Hulu.
So, I know exactly. I blame you.
Okay, I am ready with the clip when you are.
It's one of the last acceptable biases. First of all, what is the difference
I know.
And how people treat you in a smaller body versus being in a bigger body?
I am treated like a completely different human being. And now that I'm in a smaller body, the interesting thing is I went into a store the other day. I took some clothes. I went into the dressing room. And I tried on the pair of jeans, and they fit. They fit. They looked all right, I thought. But I had an emotional response to it. Like, I started to cry because it was like I felt bad for the old version of me, right, that wouldn't have been able to just go try on some jeans at a store.
Yeah. So how do you handle all the judgment now, the fact that you've lost the weight? Because you get a lot of nasty comments.
I understand that there is a major lack of education around all of this. I mean, there's so much ignorance. There's this idea that you just don't eat and you'll lose weight.
And that fat is a personal choice.
It is a personal choice. And you just don't eat. You go to the gym and you'll be good.
And you know what? What we're going to learn here is that that is true for some people.
Mm-hmm.
That is true for some people.
Absolutely.
But not for people like you.
Absolutely.
And also for myself.
I've written a couple of books. You write something in a book. You edit it like several times. You do readings of it. You answer questions about it in the press. You talk about it for years, right? I think by the end of that process, I would think that something I had written in a book and like very fully sort of debunked for myself couldn't get me angry.
Mm.
Like it was day one again.
Yeah.
But then Oprah fucking said, it's the last acceptable bias.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I am mad with the strength of a woman 10 years younger.
Yeah. Sorry, Oprah, how many anti-trans laws have we had passed this year?
Also homeless people.
Yeah.
How do people treat people who've been to prison?
Mm. Also billionaires, the way that Bernie talks about billionaires.
Yeah. Yes. It's very accepted to be biased against billionaires.
I was trying to break your brain even more. Damn.
Amongst it. You're trying to galaxy brain me.
I wanted you to say, yeah, wait.
Loser says what? That's what that was.
I tried. Damn it. But then what was so interesting to me is this ending thing where they're like, how do you deal with the shame now? Because a lot of people stigmatize you for losing weight.
Again, I would argue that is not stigma for losing weight. That is anti-fatness that you are experiencing residually because you didn't do it in a way that allowed other people to watch a fat person suffer.
Right.
There's a sense that you have not paid enough of a price for it.
Right.
There is not a stigma around weight loss.
Yeah.
There is massive approval for weight loss.
Yeah.
As witnessed by, I have more clothing options, as witnessed by all of this sort of stuff, right? Like, she's reaping the rewards.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an experience of stigma. It's just not.
But then what's so interesting to me about, like, Oprah's like ability to empathize. And she keeps bringing it up on this special about like, why were people mean to you for losing weight? That's the thing that she's like more focused on than like existing weight stigma. And like some people are just still fat and they get treated like shit. Yep. That's what she's interested in, is the stigma around taking these drugs to lose weight, which is a completely different thing. But I don't think that like she realizes that.
She's talking about like, we've got to stop shaming people. And I will tell you this, a vast majority of the people who have been shittiest to me about my size thought they were doing me a favor.
Yeah.
They're not seeing that as shaming behavior.
Yeah.
As I was looking out in the audience that is like mostly not visibly fat people.
Yeah, yeah, right? It's really noticeable. Yeah.
I was
yeah.
like, this is actually who needs the message about like, what does shaming look like and how do you stop doing it?
Mm.
Tressie McMillan Cottom wrote a really wonderful...
Oh, I know, I was going to reference this too.
Yeah. So Tressie McMillan Cottom wrote a really wonderful piece for the New York Times. And one of the pieces that she pulled out of this and sort of her landing point for all of this is, this is actually just the story of Oprah coming to love her body.
Yeah.
That's the story that's being told here. And everything is sort of in service to that.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so then after the segment with Amy, we have a segment where we go to the Cleveland Clinic and learn about like the science of fatness and the sort of standard thing of like how the drugs work, which we're not really gonna get into because like I think most people know that by now, and also like we covered it in our Ozempic episode. They talk to somebody named Dr. Butch, which I really liked.
I also like
how
that.
Is this not like a lesbian bar?
Sorry, Dr. Butch is not a bar for lesbians. Dr. Butch is like the like Plenty of Fish, the Match Doctor, like the like you're in it to get married. Come find your Dr. Butch.
Okay, we're gonna hear from Dr. Butch and the lady, the lady doctor.
Dr. Butch and the lady doctor. Jesus,
who's, I feel
Christ,
bad because I don't know her name, but I'm sure I'm...
Amanda Velasquez from Cedars-Sinai.
Okay. Thank you for doing actual journalism on this show. What is the name of the people to whom we're referring?
Just writing down the names of people who appear on screen. Journalism.
I'm like, whatever. The lady, the dude, and the lady. Okay, here's this.
Both of you are consultants to the drug companies. What does that mean?
What that means is that they're looking for our expert opinion to be able to deliver high quality care to patients.
You know, I've been involved with some of these companies in developing educational programs and modules for medical students and medical trainees to learn more about the disease of obesity. I'm also running clinical trials with future medications.
Okay, so the obesity epidemic among children.
Okay, so
get ready to get emotionally crushed.
Yeah.
Up next, kids.
This whole clip, which includes some like extra filler stuff at the beginning, is 56 seconds long.
Jeez.
So it's like we have this little brief thing. And the thing is, what I was thinking about this is like I think I'm reacting in like a contrarian way to this special because it's like my reaction to propaganda is to just be like, no, it's not. No, it's not. No, it's not. Right. And I don't want to go overboard. Like the fact that these people take money from drug companies is like a fairly standard thing in the U.S. medical system. And it's bad everywhere. And I don't want to like pretend that these people are getting some like brown envelope full of cash from Novo Nordisk and they're saying things that they don't believe. I think they believe all this stuff. I don't think that there's like actual corruption going on here, but it's like there's this weird thing with the special and with like with Oprah's oeuvre generally, where it's like she refuses to have adult conversations about things.
Just on its face, regardless of how you feel about these drugs, regardless of how you feel about any of the sort of surrounding issues, you can acknowledge that like everyone featured in this special has a financial stake in these drugs continuing to get funded and continuing to be popular. As a media piece, I just can't fathom getting something past an editor who would be like, oh, you only talk to people who are on the payroll
of this
company?
Yeah.
Cool. Sounds good.
We have talked about how, like, I think if you want to take the medication, you should take the medication. I know people that are taking it. There's now better data on, like, the health benefits of taking the medication. And, like, lots of people are taking it for all kinds of reasons. And, like, I have no interest in, like, litigating whether or not people take it. And, like, the problems with Ozempic are the problems with the U.S. medical system writ large, right? The merging of these financial interests and like things that people need to live.
Yep.
Does that mean they're fucking scamming you? Does that mean they're totally indifferent to whether drugs provide a benefit or harm. No, but it's like, we're adults here. We can have an adult conversation about the fact that, like, it's pretty unseemly that these drug companies are paying the doctors that are now out here effectively promoting it.
Yes.
Like, the fact that the drug companies paid for all of the trials. I think the trials generally are, like, considered, they're well-regarded. They appear to be run relatively well. It still makes me really fucking uncomfortable that they're paid for by Novo Nordisk, right?
Yes.
And so we can just have a fucking conversation about it. You don't have to accept when somebody just says to you, like, oh, they're just trying to provide the best care for patients. They're also marketing a drug for which they're earning $1,300 a month. Come on.
It was, like, really astounding. And then there's this part where I was like, Oprah, you're so close. It's like swing and a miss with Oprah, where she starts talking through and credentialing how much work she's doing. She's like, I run 3 to 5 miles
yeah,
a day.
Yeah,
wait,
yeah.
What is she? I have it written down somewhere.
She hikes. She like hikes 30 minutes a day or something.
I hike or run 3 to 5 miles a day. Yeah. I do weight resistance training every day. I eat a healthy diet, blah, blah, blah. And it's just a field guide to being a good fatty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 100%.
The idea of a good fatty is like the person who tells people who are policing their food and their size all the things that that person wants to hear.
Yeah.
You're putting on a social performance of like, look at me eating all this salad.
Yeah.
Look at me exercising all the time. I promise I'm working on it, right? That yeah. you're in this constant state of sort of like preemptively apologizing
yeah.
for your body and credentialing all of the work you're putting into it because you don't want people to perceive you as lazy.
Totally.
It made me so sad, and it felt like this real window into like, Oprah has absolutely been a big victim of diet culture, there's no question, and of anti-fatness, there's no question.
Mm.
And also, in being a victim of those things, it has also taught her how to be really good at navigating it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The lesson here is that when you have experienced this much stigma, it gets you really good at identifying that stigma, but it also gets you really good at reproducing it as a way to escape it yourself.
So after we do Dr. Butch and the Lady.
Mm-hmm.
We then go to Missouri where we meet Maggie, who was this kid who just like was fat her whole life. And she has gastric bypass at age 13, but that doesn't appear to be working. So she starts taking another GLP-1 agonist called Victoza. She ends up losing 106 pounds. They say in this special that she is one of the first teens in the country. It's like kind of an experimental thing. We talked about the AAP guidelines.
Mm.
This story of Maggie, I don't know if you caught this, but she found Maggie through an article in The Cut.
Yeah, 1 million people tagged us in it.
Oh, did they?
Okay. And I was like, I'm not reading this. This is simply too sad for me.
This is an article called An American Girlhood in the Ozempic Era by Lisa Miller. And what was really interesting to me about it, so I was not aware of this at the time. Nobody tags me. They always tag you.
Right. They're like, hey, this seems like it hews more closely to your own personal trauma.
Yeah, this seems like it will like re-trigger Aubrey's trauma in a way that it will not. Yeah. With my,
it really seems like this will ruin your day / month. Yeah, here you go.
Well, what was so interesting to me about it is that the actual article is like very good.
Mm.
And it's a really interesting portrait of like fat phobia in like this Missouri school where this poor little girl is going. And she's like basically getting fatter and fatter. And the kids are just fucking horrible to her. And it appears, this is an interesting thing in that it appears with these, you know, these GLP-1 agonists, they basically like trigger this like satiety hormone, like they make you feel full, right? And it appears that this girl has like some sort of like imbalance where like she just never feels full. So her mom talks about like she would go over to a friend's house and they'd have dinner and then she'd come home and her mom would be like, oh, have you had dinner? And she'd be like, oh no. And then she'd just like eat another dinner. And her mom says like, oh, well, I knew that she was lying. Like I you know, spoke to the mom or whatever, and I knew that they had had dinner over there, but like, I didn't want to shame her about her food or her body. Like I'm trying to be good about this stuff. She's just hungry all the time and she's just eating like all the time. And so like she goes on these GLP-1s and like it seems like it actually like gives her for the first time like actual satiety signals. She's like, I feel full for the first time. That actually seems like a relatively good use case for GLP-1s. It seems like she has like an actual sort of chemical thing going on in her body that just like something is out of whack with her hormones. And like she seems like a really nice little girl and her mom is like honestly seems super nice and like she's doing her best.
Right.
She talks about going into a doctor at some like endocrinology clinic or something. And they just start like scolding her about food and like, you should feed her something different. And she's like, I can't afford to feed her something different. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? And like, we've like, she's basically talking about medical like weight stigma.
Yeah.
And like, this mom gets like really radicalized on this shit. She's like, fuck you. I've like, can you just ask me what me and my daughter are going through, please?
She talks about this in studio a little bit too. She says at one point, I had a healthcare provider tell me she would be 500 pounds by the time she was 16.
This is interesting.
Here's my initial response to this. And then you tell me what the story is.
Well, it's not true. But we'll get to that.
Oh, it didn't happen?
No. In the article, this was the counselor or like the director of a fat camp that she sent her to.
Oh,
this is just like essentially
off.
A random
fuck
lady.
Off. Fuck off. Well, but also very fucking telling that I do think there are parents who consider people who work at fat camps to be healthcare providers.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think this is the problem. It's like everyone is pretending to have fucking credentials on this.
When she was talking about this, like you said, I was like, this is just medical weight stigma, which is a massive fucking problem that this special is not engaging with at all.
Yeah.
The thing that this made me think about is I got a call from a reporter some years ago being like, hey, I want to talk to you about, you know, fat stuff and health and whatever. And we had a conversation and this was just like, you know, health and wellness reporter from some dude.
Mm.
He called me back a few days later and was like, hey, I have some follow up questions for you. And I was like, great, I'm swamped. Can you just email them to me? And he emailed me the follow up questions and they were like, I spoke to a doctor who says that you might be healthy now, but by the time you hit 40, you'll lose your knees and hips.
What the fuck?
And I had to figure out how to fucking respond to this.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Right? He was like, how do you respond to this? And I was like, oh, fuck, this is now a hit piece.
Yeah.
And it got really basic shit about me wrong. It was like, she's a 32-year-old Californian. And I was like, 38-year-old Oregonian. Nice try. But like, the response that I ended up sort of mustering for this dude is I was like, I find it really questionable that a doctor would offer a diagnosis to a patient he's never even seen.
Yeah.
So like when she said this thing about a healthcare provider told me she'd be 500 pounds by the time she was 16, I was like, yes, I have heard healthcare providers say less founded and like more horrifying shit. So I'm like,
yeah,
I appreciate that it was a fat camp director. But again, I feel like this is not out of the realm for like horrifying shit that, and it's honestly like a pretty mild version of the horrifying shit that doctors do to fat people.
I mean, we've been doing this show for long enough that I'm like,
totally.
We're like 50 things worse than this,
totally.
Which is so fucked up. Yeah.
You're talking about like all of this complexity in this article. When this shows up on screen in the special, it does the same thing as with the previous personal story, where it's just like, now she's happy and she's socializing and she's going to prom for the first time. And I'm like, that's not like a health outcome.
Yeah.
That is people who are behaving differently because she looks different. And like, I am glad that your daughter is having a less difficult time. But again, there are still fat kids at that school who are still getting the shit that this kid is no longer getting.
Yeah.
Part of my emotional response, it was strongest around this teen.
Mm.
I was like, oh, I feel ashamed and worthless as a person in a way that I have not since the last time I was in a weight loss program.
Oh, really?
This rhetoric is so strong and it is tapping into such a deep wellspring of shame that is like not just exists in me as an individual, but is like culturally mandated of fat people
and
is around us all the time. And it really is just like, it does feel like this moment of like, hey guys, remember that one time we talked about loving your body? That was funny.
Yeah.
This is only increasing weight stigma.
Yeah.
In part because it's paying such little lip service to it.
Right.
And it's allowing people to go, yeah, of course. It's like the, I'm not racist, but I'm not a misogynist, but women, they shouldn't be driving.
No, totally.
It is really the like caveat that allows you to then say your most horrible fucking beliefs about fatness and fat people. And that's what this special is doing.
Right.
They keep saying weight stigma is bad and then offering up avoiding weight stigma as a benefit of becoming a thin person. right? Right, so right. I'm like, you're creating the stigma while you're saying stigma is bad, which is almost always how that has been going with the sort of discourse around these drugs.
Because you're reinforcing all of the underlying beliefs while claiming to be challenging them.
Right. Yeah. Again, as previously mentioned, like, oh, you can't just take these drugs. It also has to be in conjunction with a healthy lifestyle. No, it fucking doesn't.
Yeah, no, it's mostly just taking the drugs.
It's mostly just taking the drugs, but it is culturally intolerable and frankly not saleable to say, you don't need to do anything, you just need to take this drug.
I think there's something really interesting in like the sort of the changing media about this, right? Because as I said, this article about Maggie is like good. It says like weight and health are not perfectly correlated and like the BMI is bullshit and like weight stigma is really bad. And it does this in like, it really like understands these issues and presents them in like a nuance, like the way that we would present them. It's actually like very good. But then it also has a weird fucking thing about like, according to some fat activists, you should sacrifice your health for body positivity or something.
What?
And you're like, what the fuck? It's like literally like one sentence. And you're like, what the fuck is this? Like, why do you feel the need?
According to some fat, like name the person.
Exactly. So
name the person.
Let me fucking read this to you. It's one thing to be proud of your body, some parents say. It's another to subordinate one's health to that pride, as some of the most radical fat activist groups seem to endorse.
NAFA's not saying this, ASDA's not saying this, Flair's not saying this, and Fat Rose is not fucking saying this.
This is something you've said on the show so many times of like, after social change happens, there's this immediate erasure of the people who made it happen.
Yes.
The claims, the central claims of the fat activist movement are what you are saying. Right? BMI is bullshit. Weight and health are not perfectly correlated. Stigma is severe and widespread. Most attempts to lose weight fail. Those are fucking fat activist messages. The reason that those have become mainstream is due to the success of the fat activist movement. They have been correct on the merits for decades, right? And yet we still get this weird fucking thing where it's like, even in sensitive depictions that are like nuanced and good and accept the science and are like fully on board with all the stuff that we say on the show, you still have to throw in this bizarre thing. It's like a sort of like compulsion. It's like, I can't stop myself from saying like, well, so I'm a fat activist. Why? Why would you just join this movement and endorse this movement that you're fucking agreeing with?
Well, and also you don't have to join or endorse the movement. You could just straight up leave this out, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
This only functions, there are two things that this functions as. One, an untrue statement.
Yes.
And two, a smear of a faceless movement.
And then also, this isn't about the article, but this is just about like Maggie. So she's now, according to the article, she's now gaining the weight back. The bariatric surgery effects have lessened. The drug that she's on is not working as well. They don't want to put her on Wegovy because she can't afford it. And so the last scene of the article is they're saying like, well, we should probably put you on phentermine. And just like, oh, okay, she's probably going to go on phentermine now. Again, should we not like say that on Oprah that like she's not even on the drugs that we're talking about? She's on this other different drug and it's not really working anymore.
And the replacement drug is half of fucking Fen-Phen.
Yeah, it's half of Fen-Phen. And like this is the previous. I mean, they say all this stuff in the special of like the previous generation of weight loss drugs like didn't work as well. It's like, okay, well, she's going on to one of them.
That's the other thing I will say about this and the Jamie Oliver shows as well, is I was like, I think it is categorically irresponsible and horrific to decide that adults need to discuss kids' bodies and looks on television.
No, I was not comfortable with this whole segment at all. She seems really nice, but yes. I just don't want, like, this is, the kids at her school are going to watch this.
I've been the kid in the doctor's office where the doctor and your parents are talking about what a fucking problem it is, how fucking fat you are, and what a piece of shit that means other people think you are. You're getting so many messages about your worth. You're not misinterpreting them. You're hearing them correctly from the people you are told to trust most in your life.
Yeah.
That you are a piece of shit because of the way that you look and that will always hold you back.
Yeah.
Those conversations need to stop, period.
Yeah.
But like, we definitely don't need to put them on a fucking primetime network special.
We need to watch another clip because it's very warm in here. And I might have to take my underwear off completely because it's so fucking hot in here.
I just, for some reason, in my like imagining the place that you are in, I saw the photos over top of the couch where you were sitting, but I didn't see the couch.
Yeah.
And for some reason, those photos go with a leather couch. And I was like, Mike, don't take off your underpants.
No.
That was going to be uncomfortable.
No, I am soaking into an IKEA couch. I'm rapidly losing moisture. Okay, so then we have another clip. This is, you're gonna love/hate this one.
I recently made the decision to not continue serving on the board of Weight Watchers. And I made that decision because I wanted no perceived conflict of interest for this special.
No perceived.
And I also donated all of my shares in Weight Watchers to the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture so that I could have a conversation with you, Seema Sistani, the CEO of Weight Watchers. And I'm glad you're here because I joined Weight Watchers and joined the board back in 2015. And at the time, I was really very excited. I was excited about, I was counting those points and I said, this is it, this is it. This is it. And I did. I lost some weight. I put back on some weight. And now Weight Watchers has changed its philosophy and has purchased a company that is in the weight loss medications. Can you tell us why that philosophy changed?
We are the most clinically tested, evidence-based, science-backed behavior change program.
Nope.
But we were missing the third prong, which was biology.
There could be
somebody who needs medications because they have that biological underpinning. And therefore, what is so important is for us to provide that care and also to help people release the shame. For all those people who came side by side and took on the behavior change, some of them walked away without the success.
Mm-hmm.
And to those people, I want to say, it's not your fault.
I'm sorry?
Weight Watchers if we've got Zepbound and Wegovy?
Weight Watchers is not just about weight loss.
Oh, no,
it's about community, it's about education, mm-hmm. and it is about care. That's our new philosophy, is to help people live longer, happier lives with weight health care.
Versus before, when we urged people to live longer, sadder lives, they just hated themselves the whole way fucking through.
We're not about weight loss. We're about community, which is why the only communities that we form are about losing weight. I
feel so frustrated by it. So, like, these are some of the biggest players in these conversations about fatness and fat people and what it means to be fat and how to lose weight and how much it's about your character and how much it's about motivation and willpower and all of these, like, loaded terms, right? People who've been saying this for decades are now saying, guys, it's time to release the shame. And there's no grappling with, hey, sorry, we produced a lot of the shame.
Right.
Or everybody was producing shame and so were we. And that was wrong.
And also, every previous time we told you we had this cracked, we were wrong.
But this time, we've got it cracked.
They have that one thing where Oprah is just very briefly, she's like, oh, by the way, people have to be on it for the rest of their lives. Right? And the doctor's like, yes. And they just move on really quickly. Like, oh, well, that's kind of a big deal.
There is an intro segment where they flash a bunch of big questions, like existential questions on screen.
There's like the little intro, like, and they have the little like Anchorman music.
Yep, totally. It's like a little montage-y sort of thing. They say, is being overweight a lack of willpower? Or is obesity a medically treatable disease? Are these new drugs a miracle cure? Are they safe? They pose all of these questions as if they are going to answer all
questions. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they do not.
Yeah.
It's presented as we're going to sort the facts from the fiction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when you get into it, it is straightforwardly a narrative that serves sales of these drugs.
Wait. This is the perfect lead into our next clip. This is
great.
This is like if I was going to show one clip, this would be the clip.
A comprehensive study on this class of medicines found that nearly 17% of patients discontinued medication because of side effects. Now, the vast majority of which were gastrointestinal. And we asked Dr. Jennifer Ashton, chief medical correspondent for ABC News, to share her expertise on the side effects. She is board certified in obesity medicine, a practicing OBGYN, has a master's degree in nutrition. Here's Dr. Jen.
Oprah, I'm so glad we're talking about this. Let me give you some historical context and perspective on this class of medication, the GLP-1 agonist. People often don't realize that these were first FDA approved in the United States for help in managing type 2 diabetes almost 20 years ago. So we have extensive safety and efficacy data. They have a good track record. However, when you talk about risks, I think you need to ask four questions. What are the risks of taking these drugs? versus what are the risks of not taking these drugs? What are the benefits of taking these drugs? And what are the benefits of not taking these drugs?
Oh, now I fucking
yeah.
That if you do not treat or manage the conditions of overweight or obesity, the risks are significant. Increased risks of heart attack, stroke, various types of cancer. That has to be part of this decision-making analysis. So take a very rare potential risk or side effect of this class of medication. But if a risk is noted to occur one out of every 100,000 times, that's rare, that's one case. But if all of a sudden a million people are on that drug, you're going to see that rare risk or side effect 10 times. What I tell patients is if you had high blood pressure, if you had high cholesterol, if you had depression, you would treat it. It is conclusively known that the conditions of overweight and obesity are complex chronic disease states, not character flaws, Oprah. So they should be managed accordingly.
Oh, I love that so much, Dr. Jen. Thank you.
Oh, I love that so much, Dr. Jen.
Oh, I love that.
Ah!
Again, it's like these aesthetics of like responsible journalism. Like now Jen is going to walk us through the side effects.
Cut away to a doctor in a lab coat.
Yeah, in a literal fucking lab coat.
Yeah.
We actually kind of tried to do this in our own episode where it's like, okay, here are the side effects.
Yeah.
X percent of people get this, X percent of people get that. Some of them are rare, some of them are more common. And just like an informational overview, right? But it's like, rather than even pretending or attempting to do that, she's like, well, what about the risks of being fat? Well, oh, sorry, are you just going to tell me like basic information about what to expect? And then she does this insane fucking thing where she's like, well, some of them are rare. And when you have more people taking a medication, more people are going to have the rare side effects. And like, that's the reason. But like Oprah just said, 17% of people dropped out of the study due to the side effects. That doesn't matter.
Almost 1 in 5.
But then what's weird? This actually is Oprah getting it wrong. This is like one of the factual errors. That study, it was 17% of people dropped out of the study for any reason.
All of the
studies indicate that like the side effects are not, I mean, everyone seems to get them, but as far as people stopping the medication because the side effects are so bad, it's actually pretty rare. And so in this one, it was like 9% of people on the placebo also dropped out. And some of that was due to side effects. So it's like 9% versus 17%.
I will say I had a conversation with a healthcare provider at one point. I had been put on metformin, which is a common like fat people drug used for treatment of PCOS and diabetes and a number of things. I was talking to a healthcare provider about it. And I was like, hey, I had really severe GI side effects from taking this. And I was like, but I've also read the literature and I know that that's only like 20% of people and that 80% of people are totally fine on this drug. And she was like, yeah, I've heard that too. I'd like to meet someone from that 80%.
Oh, really? That's
she was like, I have so many patients on this drug. It is the first drug that is recommended for treatment of a bunch of different things because it's cheap and it's effective. But she was just like, the research is saying one thing. Clinically, I will tell you, I don't have a patient on this who has not complained.
There's now been more real world studies of GLP-1s. And like, as we predicted, the real world adherence rates are like really low. Like there's a study that just came out that the 1 year adherence rates for all GLP-1s was, I think it was 19%. And semaglutide had the highest adherence rate at 40%. Yeah. But like that means over the course of a year, 60% of people stopped taking it.
Yeah.
So like we don't know why that is. We don't know if it's side effects. We don't know if it's cost. We don't know if it's convenience. There's all kinds of reasons why people don't adhere to these drugs. And also like even like blood pressure medications and statins have like a 50-50 adherence rate after a year. So it's like this is actually very common with these kinds of medications. But like again, it's like people do stop taking these pills. It appears in real life. I keep saying pills even though they're injections. I know they're injections. I'm talking. Just save your
emails. Anticipating comments. Anticipating comments.
But like, yeah, I mean, again, in the studies, it doesn't appear that the side effects are like all that severe or all that long lasting. But what's so weird and like why this whole thing feels so sinister and coordinated is that like they can't just admit that. You should be able to just say like, yeah, a lot of people get side effects. For some people, they're so fucking bad that they stop taking it. That doesn't appear to be the typical response, but it's like you can just talk about pros and cons of the medications like I'm a fucking adult.
Right. I think It is a conversation that is quote unquote about science that doesn't sound like any science exists in the world of science, right?
Yeah.
It's very much like, have you heard the good word?
Just yeah, it's tonally. Crazy. This is why I'm having such a like strong contrarian reaction to it. Is because like it's not because it's an overview of the medications. It's because it's full on just like you should be taking these medications. Like there's essentially no other conclusion to walk away from this special ed. Even the stuff on weight stigma, right? If this left people with an impression of like, hey, maybe I should be nicer to fat people if they choose not to take this medication or can't for whatever reason. It's like, it doesn't even leave you with that impression.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know where you would get that impression from this special, aside from Oprah briefly saying it and the start and the end.
Yeah.
I think you and I both read that correctly as like, hey, shut up.
Did you notice Oprah's thing too, where she cuts to this woman who's like, yeah, I had to stop taking, I think it was Wegovy, because like I had to go to the ER because I was vomiting blood. And then Oprah's like, so are you taking another one? And she's like, it was actually like really traumatic and bad. And then Oprah's like, so are you going to start another one?
Yeah. And she was like, I'm nervous too. Yeah. She does go back for a couple of bites at that apple. And you're like, what? Come on, man.
Again, Oprah can't process. They're like, this just isn't going to work for some people.
It is the mindset of a diet evangelist, which is if someone's I don't want to, or I can't, or it didn't work for me. There's no room for that in your brain because your brain has processed this as, this is leading to weight loss for me. Therefore, it is the correct way humans to live.
Yeah, it's like the barefoot shoes people. It's the barefoot shoes people all over again.
Totally. It's like intolerable that someone else is making a different decision because it is like a threat to your worldview.
Yeah.
Like you so deeply emotionally need this to be a morally right, sound decision because of how much you feel like you're getting from it.
Yeah.
It really is the vibe of like, every person who's like 2 weeks into a diet.
She says, I've read a bunch of articles actually on her like weight loss journey. She's still on Weight Watchers. She still does points.
3 to 5 miles a day.
She's very much like at this place in like a fad diet. That this is a very typical pattern from people.
Which I also think is sort of the point that our cultural discourse is at.
Yeah.
We are treating this in the ways that people treat fad diets. This is the Atkins diet getting discussed in 2002.
Yeah.
It's the only one that really works. Wah! Yeah. So that was everywhere. And then there were a bunch of people being like, you just eat cheeseburgers all day. That's not good for you.
Yeah.
Because it felt like people were enjoying it too much and getting thin too easily.
No, I know. It's also very funny that Dr. Atkins, the book was called Dr. Atkins Diet Revolution.
Yep.
And this special is called The Weight Loss Revolution. We're even doing the revolution shit. This leads us to our next clip, though. The final clip.
Mm.
We're just going to say the same stuff again because this one's so dumb. But we'll see.
This is really going to, you're going to edit this down and you're going to be like, hey, I edited down all of your rantings and ravings, and functionally they boil down to 2 points that get done in 2.5 minutes.
This episode's going to be 6 minutes long. Look,
I need
it.
You to say different things, not just the same things in different ways.
Okay, this is the clip that you knew was coming. This is the part where she talks to both of the drug company reps.
I wanted to ask you, in the Novo Nordisk offices, when this hit TikTok and became like a sensation, what was going on back there?
It was actually over 2 decades ago that Novo Nordisk made a stand that obesity is a disease and that the shame that society heaps on people who are dealing with excess weight and obesity needs to stop. And both of those things were equally important. And I'll say it over and over again, as someone who still, myself, struggles with excess weight and obesity, I have to remind myself constantly, this is not a personal failing.
Yes.
Even surrounded by all this education and data and doing what I do for a living.
One thing that was not in that clip, but is in the like lead up to that clip and the closeout of that clip, like she's talking about it like it's the moment you've been waiting for.
Oh, I know.
They said we couldn't do it. We've got both Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly in the same room. At one point she goes, first time in 100 years. And I'm like,
that was so weird.
No one cares.
No one cares. And also they're on like various like boards together. And like these companies have all kinds of like collaboration on various things constantly. It's like they're lobbying the same fucking senators together.
Right.
It's not like that.
You didn't get Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston to appear together. This feels like how like somebody on QVC introduces someone you've never heard of.
Yeah.
Oh, you're in for a real treat.
But then then they do the thing, they go back and forth a little bit, and then I think it's the Novo Nordisk lady like interjects at some point and kind of like interrupts Oprah, which is interesting because Oprah's like, oh, the discourse, it's good we're having this conversation. And then she says, but it's a healthy discourse and I think it's important to have that discussion. So access is complex, just like the disease itself is complex. Obesity medications are not covered to the same extent, and that's why that out-of-pocket cost is what it is.
Nope.
They're specifically talking about like access, like why the drugs are so expensive. And Oprah does this kind of fake like, well, why are the drugs so expensive? Like this kind of fake, like tough questions thing.
I'm really hold you to account, mister.
But like, she just says like, well, obesity is complex, so the drugs are expensive, but that literally doesn't make fucking sense. And then there just was a Kaiser Family Foundation study where they looked at the different drug costs. Yes. And it's $936 in the US. It's like the list price. Some people pay more, some people pay less, whatever. It's $103 in Germany, it's $96 in Sweden, it's $83 yep. in France, and it's $155 in Canada.
They are gouging us because they can,
because they can, and because the fucking numbers are fake. The numbers are fake in Germany, too. They're fake everywhere. But it's like, they're gouging us because like we have this ridiculous system where we just fucking overpay for everything. There was also recently a Yale study where they looked at the components, like the manufacturing components of these different drugs. And GLP-1s are some of the cheapest drugs to make. They're like, they're cheaper than previous generations of diabetes drugs even. They're really cheap. And so it costs, this is in the abstract of the article, drug companies could sell GLP-1s such as Ozempic for 89 cents to $4.73 a month. They could be $1 to $5 a month. And the drug companies would still make money. That's how cheap they are to produce.
Hey, man, take it up with your insurance companies. They're the villain here.
Yeah.
Says the drug company.
It's so fucking funny for a drug company to be like, these evil capitalist insurance companies.
We'd love for you to just have free access to our product, but they won't let us.
God. I mean, we are saying the same thing now. We're like, the whole thing is so fucking counterfeit.
It's like doing journalism drag.
Yeah.
It's blowing out the weirdest parts.
I think people really struggle with this thing where Oprah and everybody else on this is saying something that's true and that is necessary, right? There should not be shaming around your weight, right? Everybody should be whatever size they are. Like, that's a true fact. But I think what's hard for people to see is that, like, this is being employed to take us backwards or to keep us yep. in the same place.
Yep.
You said this, I think, maybe on one of our first episodes, but I've been stealing it from you ever since. That like we're in this weird place now where it's like not only are you expected to be like engaged in fucking weight loss the same as you always have been, but you're now expected to perform this like, I feel so good about my body and like I'm yeah. so confident. And it's like all it's really done is add this totally impossible expectation onto fat people that like this mother of Maggie at one point even says, she's like, the thing that we struggle the most with is like, how can we teach her to be happy with her body and also asking her to change? And it's like, you can't.
Yeah.
That's what everyone's being asked to do. And like, that's the tension that this show is living within. And like, you just can't do it.
But also like, I think people think of weight stigma and anti-fatness as like, in the ways that people have historically thought about lots of forms of bigotry, which is as like a choice you have to make. And unless and until you use slurs or like make someone's life a living hell or threaten violence against someone, you're not shaming them.
Right, right.
If you want to tackle the conversation about bias and stigma, you have to then stick around for the conversation about bias and stigma where you don't talk about health risks, where yeah. you don't talk about other people maybe having a point, where you don't lend credence to these like horrifically shaming garbage arguments about the worthlessness of fat people. And I think part of the challenge with the state that we're in is that the people who are saying it's not your fault are the people trying to sell you shit to change your body.
Right.
And they're the same folks who, when there is a standalone conversation about weight stigma, are nowhere to be seen slash are shouting, but what about your health?
Right, right.
Right. So like, yeah, we're in such a morass.
Morass, that's what I call the stain on the couch that I've been sitting in.
For the last
hour and a half. The
morass. Are your underpants on or off at this point?
I cannot comment. I will not confirm.